Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You're now listening to La Verdad Podcast. Bueno, mi gente, welcome back to another episode of La Verdad Podcast. And this is your boy, Christian. But before we begin the show, I want to kind of go in and do a little sponsorship that we have. So this episode of La Verdad Podcast is actually brought to you by Sonia Figueroa of CSonia.com.
Are any of you looking to buy a house, or perhaps you're thinking about selling your home? Look no further and let our chica, Sonia Figueroa, help you out.
She has over 12 years of experience in real estate. Sonia has helped over 200 sellers and buyers combined in the last couple of years. So if you're a first-time home buyer or perhaps a first-time seller, Sonia is your go-to chica.
Definitely. And I'm sure some of you have maybe already started your own research online, reading articles that probably don't make any sense to you, especially if this is your first time buying or selling. Or maybe you have spoken to other people, but you haven't really found someone that actually knows what they're doing.
Well, you know, if this sounds like you, reach out to Sonia Figueroa at www.csonia.com. That is www.seesonia.com. Or check her out on any of the social media outlets. And mi gente, ella habla español también, so check her out. Peace. All right, so got that out of the way. It was the first time we ever did it.
That was awesome. That was awesome.
So how are you guys doing?
I'm doing good. This is V-Fig, by the way, on the mic.
Hi, guys. Matthew.
So how's, I know we kind of had a little break last week. We didn't get to record. So we're back at it again here now. And then we have a little different setup. So if you're watching the video on YouTube, usually we're set up in one side of the room with the camera facing us. But we have a big group today.
Can you see
So you probably can't see me. I'll wave my hand over here. So we have a bigger group. So we have to take advantage of the little space that we have. And then plus it's hot as hell in Chicago. Yeah. So we have the air conditioner going. Que yo creo que no está funcionando
bien. The ghetto one. The ghetto AC.
Pero today's episode... you know, a lot of people have been hitting us up with, hey, well, you know, what's going on in Puerto Rico? You guys talk about Puerto Rico a lot. Can you give us some insight of the current crisis over there? Not only that, but a lot of people have been wondering, you know, is Puerto Rico a colony? Is it a state? Is it a, you know, we have listeners from different areas that perhaps don't know why we're so passionate about what's happening in Puerto Rico.
Why so, we wave that flag everywhere, exactly. Right?
So today, actually, we're recording on Sunday. Sunday, what is it, 6-11, June 11th, and the parade is going on in New York. On top of that, Puerto Rico right now, the people of Puerto Rico are voting for statehood or to stay as it is, right, I want to say?
Or independence, too.
Independence, there we go.
Three options.
Independence, stay as an Estado Libre Asociado, right, or statehood. Yeah. So the people of Puerto Rico are right now voting for that. So it's a big historical moment. On top of that, like I mentioned already, New York is having their parade. There was a lot of controversy behind that. So, los boricuas están unidos hoy somehow or another. They're united today and are representing Puerto Rico in some way or another. So, because of that, we actually brought in the Chicago Boricua Resistance, who are from here. It says it in their title, Chicago. who are going to give us a little bit more of detail, and we're going to have a dialogue, and I'm so excited to have them here because we're going to talk about stuff that I've been reading, stuff that I've been researching since I was real young.
He's ready. He's ready.
So I'm on it, man. I'm ready to talk about this. So with us here today, we have Emily with the Chicago Boricua Resistance, and if you guys can introduce yourself to our followers of La Verdad.
Hi, my name is Emily Medina Rodriguez. I moved to Chicago 2 years ago and got together with a few friends that recently, people who recently moved to Chicago. So we wanted to do something, and we really didn't know what was radical in Chicago. So we were trying to find that spot for ourselves. Yes. Coming from the island, coming from a lot of political movement, a lot of action, and then coming from Chicago, it was kind of hard to see. Yeah. the slowdown, basically. Yeah. So we decided that we needed our own space to just create a new political culture. Mm-hmm. And we're still starting. We're just in diapers right now. But the reality is that we started creating a live radio right now, and we're trying to get the voice out. We're basically trying to make a bridge between Puerto Rico and the diaspora, trying to bring the news from the island, from people that we know, that we have all the connections, and we just call them or email or anything, and or they just drop by. But in reality, the need, we saw the need for people to get informed about what is happening in the island here in Chicago, and we decided that the live radio was definitely the best option.
Nice.
And do you have a lot of listeners from Puerto Rico listening as well?
We are trying to get both listeners in Puerto Rico and in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Right now, like I just said, we're just starting, so trying to create that base. But we are trying to diversify our political action too. Yeah. So we're not trying to stay as a live radio, but to also create more activities around the fiscal board the crisis in Puerto Rico, mm-hmm. information forums, and all sorts of activities to bring awareness of what's happening in Puerto Rico right now.
And it's very interesting too, because when I was researching, like when I mentioned before, when somebody said, hey, can you talk about the Promesa bill, and I'm like, man, like who can I contact, you know, because there's first I needed to know who will give me the both sides of the coin, right? Or who will give me not just what we're supposed to listen to or hear. Mm-hmm. And then I wanted somebody that was local, you know, because if not, we'll have to go to Puerto Rico or I have to go to New York or something to get that.
We could still go.
If somebody wants to sponsor us to go over there. But, so I remember I was looking around and I was asking my friend Tomas, big shout out to Tomas, and he was like, oh, check out this group of people. They started out a couple years ago and they might be able to answer a lot of these questions. So thank you for coming in. We're gonna pick your brain and ask so many questions. But you're also joined by
my name is Edgardo Roman. I'm just freshly from the island. Literally just in the US the last 3 weeks.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
I moved to Chicago the last 3 weeks. I'm being part of the activist movement in Puerto Rico, especially the student movement the last years. We have right now we just ended a strike that they comprehend the whole system of polygon university. Mm-hmm. We were part of it. The last strike we had in 2010. And we're trying to, you know, as we moved here to Chicago, I've been trying to participate more with the community of Puerto Ricans here. I haven't yet kind of know it as far as I want.
Yeah.
So this is a really big new experience for me, but the resistance is the same everywhere.
Yeah.
The island.
Exactly. And it's very interesting too that you just mentioned the resistance is everywhere. And one of the things that I was while doing research and reading and all that, you know, you have people that are doing the resistance in Argentina, you know, even in España, you know, like I follow Residente Calle 13 a lot, right? Residente, and he's over there doing, you know, making a voice for the estudiantes in Puerto Rico. And on top of that, the fact that you guys got here to Chicago, it gives you a little bit of there's a lot of stuff that happens here in Chicago that maybe might open up your eyes and say, oh, wow, there's a whole different animal happening here. And we talked about that before in the podcast. But before I go into any of that, let's talk a little bit more about the Chicago Boricua Resistance and what kind of events you guys are doing to get people to know what's going on in Puerto Rico.
Well, right now we have created some forums around the topic of the humanitarian crisis, kind of explaining, bringing all the community, inviting people from the community, some different groups around Chicago that work with the Puerto Rican community, and bringing together and just to have a conversation about what's happening and bringing new info. And Edgardo, I brought Edgardo here because precisely he's fresh out the island, so
that's
he knows
awesome.
Exactly what's happening there right now, kind of running away in a kind of fashion. But the Chicago Boricua Resistance, we are trying to get as much people as possible to people who are interested in doing activities and creating a different culture of what politics is, mm-hmm. Puerto Rican politics are right now in Chicago.
Yeah.
We basically are trying to target that younger baseline, people yeah. who are attracted by a more radical way of looking at politics.
Yeah.
But at overall, we are trying to get at and support for Puerto Rican independence and also gender and racial equality mm-hmm. Here in the U.S. for the Puerto Rican communities.
Yeah.
Also in Puerto Rico, we have tried to bring information about different activism that has been done in Puerto
yeah.
Rico. Like in Puerto Rico, we always think that we are only thinking about like independence, but in reality, the activism in Puerto Rico is a huge movement. Is eco-activism, is gender movement, LGBT movement,
yeah.
The student movement is huge, mm-hmm. the labor unions. So that's what happened May 1st this year. All those movements got together
right?
In a huge march, more than 150,000 people
wow.
marching through San Juan against La Junta, which didn't make any news here in the U.S.
That's exactly. And I kind of wanted to talk about that because here in Chicago especially, apenas llegaste, have you noticed that, or maybe it's just me, you know, that there's not a lot of, we don't know too much about what's happening in Puerto Rico or the politics in Puerto Rico. Because I'll be honest with you, I did not know much about Puerto Rico's politics until I started reading, and this book kind of gave me some ideas of what's happening. And then from that, I will go and start reading in the different newspapers of Puerto Rico and listening to podcasts.
Yeah, I was the same way. I didn't learn about anything yeah. about the history of Puerto Rico mm-hmm. at all. And it was so bad. Yeah.
Focus on that.
Exactly. It wasn't until college, not even high school, nothing. It was until and then obviously choosing to learn
yeah.
about that.
So has it been something that you've noticed right away, or is it just me?
No, it's the same, not just in the community, in the Puerto Rican community, but overall, everywhere I introduce myself as a Puerto Rican,
mm-hmm.
yeah, people ask me, you are part of the United States, you are not. Every time we go to the government agency to get any help we need, the first question I always have to clarify, no, I am an American citizen, I don't have any visa, I don't know what you're talking about. My license is supposed to be valid. No, not anywhere. They accept my license.
Okay.
So I have
yeah.
to carry my passport everywhere I go because
yeah.
I have to give it. So, yeah, I kind of used to it, even though I've only been here only
That's
3 weeks.
So one of the things, too, was I remember when I was growing up. So the reason I bring this up is because you guys are obviously you want to show and teach people what the politics are going, what are the current politics that are going on in Puerto Rico. So it gets a little hard in my eyes, you know, is that there's so many politics here in Chicago that are
sure.
so all over the place. And then when I start looking into Puerto Rico, I'm like, oh my God, like, this is crazy. Like, who's this? Pepe de this, or like, what does this stand for? And then, you know, and then the language also is a barrier. So what is your technique to kind of break that down? And maybe you could give me a quick overview.
Yeah, I can.
If you're talking to somebody that doesn't know anything about Puerto Rico, what will you tell them?
Puerto Rico has always been a colony. Now, mm-hmm. although it has been a colony even before the U.S., it was a colony of Spain for 400 years. Mm-hmm. So those same political parties that we see now are the same ones as we got, like, we inherited from the time Spain was in Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
So they are basically the people who want the colonial status. So it's basically people who they have interests. They have interests with Imperio,
uh-huh.
the empire, right?
Yeah.
So they do they lose some stuff. They lose some power, economic benefits from not having the U.S. or Spain.
Mm-hmm.
It's interchangeable, really. Being in Puerto Rico, so
yeah.
in that sense, they do. They want that colonial status because they benefit from that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also the people who are, they want to be a state, which right now are the majority of people or a large sector of the Puerto Rican
yeah.
Island, the whole island, are PNP, which
mm-hmm.
are the kind of Republican, kind of conservative, more conservative than the populares, yeah, that mm-hmm. are the ones who want to keep the colonial status, basically. Yeah. But these estadistas or PNPs, they're really... They are also looking for looking after their interests. They are looking after their interests. They are coming. They want to be closer to the U.S. Not because they want to be a state as it is, but also because they gain a lot of benefits from being. But it's also a certain sector, so it's a lot of rich people, a lot of people who exactly. have properties in Puerto Rico, have a lot to lose. And then there's the independence mm-hmm. movement, which is basically historical independence movement since, you know...
And it's changed a lot.
Before Spain, before the U.S. Mm-hmm. And it has changed throughout, but basically the roots are a lot of anarchist and communist roots coming from French Revolution but right now it's really expressed through students, a few different political parties. Right now there is there are political parties who you can vote for and those who are not enroll, I guess. Yeah. But they're the Partido Independentista, mm-hmm. El Movimiento Nacional Ostosiano, okay. y El Partido del Pueblo Trabajador.
Okay.
So those are the three parties that are independence.
Towards the independence.
Yeah.
So to break it down, mi gente, you have, Puerto Rico that was, like you mentioned, a colony of Spain for many years. Then the U.S. came over, took over for many years after that. And now there's these three main political parties aside from, the small ones. Just like here in the U.S., you might have two big political parties, Democrat, mm-hmm. Republicans. Mm-hmm. Puerto Rico's, you have the Partido Nuevo Progresista, Partido Popular Democrático, and then the independence movement, which is made up of the other ones that you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Okay, so one of the things that that I wanted to break down was the fact that we've been hearing here and there in the news about this Promesa bill, but before that there was something that happened right before the Promesa bill, or that's been happening in Puerto Rico, and that's the economic crisis, I would say, right?
Exactly.
So can you break that? I know it's going to be it's really hard to break down how we got there.
We're 10 minutes, go.
But maybe a couple quick things. A lot of people have said, the government corruption in the government has caused this. The fact that we have the different types of taxes that have been imposed in Puerto Rico, where we can't even get our own stuff and we have to get it from the U.S. So a lot of that played into that. But if you could break it down real quick so that our listeners can understand what it is that's happening now.
Okay, there's several factors we have to mention. It's a big checklist, but some of that we have to mention it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any say in Congress. We only have one representative that has no vote.
Right.
So everything that Congress rule, we have to... No nos tenemos que tragar, no matter what. They control the currency, they control the military, they control the international agreement. So the few space that the local government have to manage is really small.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then they also, we have that, even though this is a small space they can play, we have a big corruption system, we have a huge bribe system. That's also part of the problem. Right now, part of our economy was the military spending. The last 20, 30 years, that has been cut down. Most of that because the evolution of the military spending of the United States mm-hmm. has relied more on drones and less than naval bases.
Mm-hmm.
So the naval bases that Puerto Rico brought to the United States, they are now less valuable.
Mm-hmm.
That also... That in 2001, 2002, 2003, we had a really big movement to get out the Marine from Vieques.
Mm-hmm.
They were bombing. Mm-hmm. They were bombing the small island east of Puerto Rico, and we had for 60 years.
Right.
A lot of cancer in that island. A lot of destruction in that island. And the movement in Puerto Rico got to the Marine to get out, but as a consequence, other naval facilities that were not in Vieques also closed down. And that created a lot of economic backlash. That even though us are as independentistas, we like that the military get out,
uh-huh.
but we couldn't have the las herramientas to bring new jobs to the area because our ties are tied up by the U.S. Congress. They even let us to the other part of the job.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of job losing in that area. The second area is manufacturing.
Yeah, it's so there's a there was a law that it was specific to the territory of Puerto Rico that it was passed by Congress that was called 936 Nueva 36, and it basically all the taxes that would be in Puerto Rico by any foreign country, foreign meaning U.S.-based company, they were all the taxes that were paid in Puerto Rico. They couldn't, they should, they didn't have to pay in federal taxes.
Is that the la ley de cabotaje?
No, that's like a economic incentive law. Okay. So that law ran like for 20, 30 years in Puerto Rico, and it was very good for the economy, especially manufacturing. A lot of small, big companies coming from the U.S., a lot of manufacturing jobs, a lot of stability for the night. We are children of stability in Puerto Rico, really. And I can speak for myself, but throughout the when I was a child, Puerto Rico was in very good condition. Like, art schools were fine, roads were pretty good. Like, everything was pretty fine. But as we came to college, I started seeing, like, stuff getting worse and worse. Like, no more renewing of anything, really. It was pretty bad. No more jobs. People were graduating, not getting jobs. Most of the people who graduate from the university don't get jobs in the island. So that's it's really hard for a lot of Puerto Ricans. But Nueva 36 was cut, was taken out, was suspended by Pedro Rosselló.
By Congress, but
it was by Congress, but while Pedro Rosselló and
father,
right?
He asked for it because he wanted to make Puerto Rico more like a state. So this wasn't a special treatment for the island. So the governor asked, "No, no, we can't live without this." And the Congress were like, "Okay," and they took it off. And a whole part of the manufacturing business have been closing down, or more than closing down,
descaling,
less workers, even more production, but less workers. Like most of the Viagra that you can buy in the United States are made in Puerto Rico. And from the 90 store for today, the same amount of Viagra has been doubled, but they only use half of employees. So they laid out a lot of workers in the area, and that was the second part that really hit us in the late of the 90s, beginning of the early 2000s. But also we had a big problem with banking by 2001, just like in the U.S. They liberated the banking system, and banks started to give a lot of loans that were not good enough, especially to the government itself. And the government itself started to be in debt. And every year they wanted to build new things. They built a train that goes basically nowhere in the metropolitan area.
Real expensive. The train in Puerto Rico is one line, and it's as expensive as the whole Chicago city.
Yeah, something like that.
It's a lot of things that I've noticed, because it's happened here in Chicago too, is that, you know, the people who come into power, politics, they'll do little projects here and there para decir, "Oh, man, mira lo que yo hice." Well, eso está, you know, this is mine. You know, I did that and during my, because it's covering other things that they probably are not doing. So I remember when that train was being built and a lot of people were against it and some people were for it. You know, I have family members that were like, "Oh, eso es lo mejor que ha pasado en Puerto Rico." And then now it's like, oh, well.
It's a luxury train. It's a luxury train. Every station is as twice or three times as big as the Union Station. Like Pharaoh's station. You know, you have the big pyramid. Yeah.
But it
doesn't make any sense.
Once they cut the 936 law, all the economy basically collapsed. And the U.S. and the state, the already corrupt state in Puerto Rico, had to take a lot of more loans, and they also closed, at that time Pedro Rosselló in the 90s also closed the public health system in Puerto Rico. He privatized also the Telefonica, the phone system. Basically right now the move in Puerto Rico economics is making everything private, even schools. That's why right now they're closing schools, not because people are moving as much, but because they want to privatize, they want to do charter schools, like here in Chicago, which have a lot of charter schools.
And that's one of the biggest protests too, right? Because the University of Puerto Rico got their funding cut by a lot from what it was used to.
And we can talk for ages.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those things that's continue. You know, if you're listening and you go on Google, just put down University of Puerto Rico, and you'll see a bunch of different, you know, strikes that have happened in the past. But right now, some of it has to do with the fact that they cut their funding, because you're mentioning that they want to privatize a lot of it. And that's a public institution in Puerto Rico.
And one of the most important public institutions, not just because the educational, ¿cómo se dice? Labor que hacen. It's not just the what they lo que aportan a la sociedad, but the University of Puerto Rico has been fundamental for the resistance in Puerto Rico, and they're punishing it.
So why not take it out when it's what's creating the most?
It's really not proportional, the spending cost to the university, when you compare to the spending cost to the police, where you compare to the spending cost to social welfare, where you compare the spending cost to every other part. We're talking about that the university, they're going to take out $202 million for next semester, not for next 10 years. This year, for next semester, they're going to deal with $200 million less than last August.
I think I get like a little background on the University of Puerto Rico is that it is the cheapest, more accessible in university in Puerto Rico. The credit is around like $55.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
basically free.
That Pell Grant is actually, for me, it was completely free because I had the Pell Grant. Yeah. And actually, it gives you money back so you can buy your books buy your all the stuff. Yeah.
Pay rent.
Pay your rent, your car. I remember buying a car with my Pell Grant, so it was a really good deal. Wow. But it's also the reality of a lot of majority of students in Puerto Rico. It's like 47% of the island is living under poverty, and students are around that same amount of students who live under poverty, and they really need accessible education. So this public university is not only it's more in the tradition of Latin American countries, where the university is part of this searching for new culture in Puerto Rico. It's a new way of looking at itself, right? And one thing is the privatization of the university as one part as an economic excuse, but also, as Edgardo said, it is the vanguard of the political movement in Puerto Rico. So, in fact, it's a good thing for them to cut back. They want to cut back the university, like descale 10%. There are 11 campuses right now around the island, and they want to maybe close some of them, maybe descale some of them.
Wow.
Because most of the money that comes, like the endowment of the university, comes from the government, because this is not Harvard, this is not Yale, you know, it's not a private university, it's not a big, particularly big university, or it's not high in the ranking or anything like that. So money coming into the university is kind of colonial in the sense that, it does, a lot of people bring money, but it's not enough to cover all the expenses that the university has. Yeah. This is why it's supported by the government as a way of the Puerto Rican people caring for the Puerto Rican people and the future students and all. But in our experience, at least, it is a school of activism also for a lot of people.
It's like a heart, like a como que it helps you out. It also inspires you.
Sí.
And I know a lot of people, and by the way, one of the things that I wanted to bring up was that I've been reading this book, and I keep talking about reading this book. It's called La Vitrina Rota o Que Carajo Pasó Aquí by Siverio Perez. And
that was new.
And it basically highlights what's happening in Puerto Rico in a book, right? So it breaks it down into 10-year gaps. So it's every decade of what has happened in Puerto Rico, starting from it starts right at 1898 when, you know, the U.S. took over Puerto Rico. And it just gives you an idea of what's happening as far as, you know, why was this governor doing this? And it goes really deep into Luis Muñoz Marín and how he, you know, created this vitrina where it made it look like a storefront of Puerto Rico, and how the U.S. used Puerto Rico. But then it also gives you what Puerto Rico did wrong, you know, because a lot of times we blame, the U.S. did this, that, which has an underlying factor, but we also did something wrong in Puerto Rico. So he explains that, and he breaks down. I'm right before going into Pedro Rosselló's, you know, when he became a governor in Puerto Rico, which is the father of the the one that's right now, pro-statehood. They want to become a state. So when I was reading that, I kept telling Vanessa, I'm like, man, like, there's so many things in here that I never learned in school. You know, in school, when I was, going into the independence movement, it was mostly, Pedro Albizu Campos and what he did, right? Exactly. But this is talking about a bunch of other things that happened, especially in University of Puerto Rico, that gave people that insight of becoming independent. But then it also breaks it down, and I wanted to talk about this, was that throughout the years, the different political movement of gaining power of the pro-statehood and the PPD, where the independence movement went down and down and down, and you have la ley de la mordaza for a while, where you can't, the gag law, you can't talk about independence, and then eventually, they take off the flags, and then when they get the flags back on, which is what a lot of us celebrate this whole week, then they get this.
Shot Luis Muñoz Marín. Like, this is not even in history books in Puerto Rico. Yeah. Like, it happened because, it wasn't all black and white. Even in that time, it was a lot of struggle. A lot of people did not, especially in the 50s and the 60s. The movement, yeah. The independence movement in Puerto Rico was huge. It was a lot of, especially because we are a Caribbean country, we are a Latin American country, and a lot of the influence coming from outside is not only from the U.S., it's also coming from other countries.
Yeah.
Especially Cuba, which is la otra ala, yeah. Right? Kuwait, Puerto Rico son paro con dos alas. The idea behind that is that a lot of the influence of the revolution in Cuba came to Puerto Rico, and the movement in the 60s grew. In the 80s, we can talk about the first student strike, which it was 1981. Your dad was there. Maybe it wasn't the first one.
No, it wasn't the first strike, but it was the biggest strike in the near past. We're talking about the Indio Piedras, the main recinto más grande. Uh-huh. We had one assembly student with 10,000 students.
Wow.
It was a really big gallery.
Really big.
There were shootings.
And every march they did in the 80s, you have to shoot the police just to be able to march through the campus, yeah. Because it was prohibited to march. You start marching and the cops would start shooting at you. Mm-hmm. And if you wanted to keep marching, you had to shoot back. there was no other way around it. And all that was in the 70s, in the 80s. We managed to really live through a mini civil war in the 70s, in the 80s. Uh-huh. A civil war that is not really talk about it like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we had like at least 20 independentistas killed by people who believe in statehood, mm-hmm. or even some Cuban immigrants who were from the far right from Cuba,
yeah.
that moved to Puerto Rico, that participated in this.
It's very scary because they're still alive and well.
Some of them are still alive in Miami and free.
Yeah.
And we still have a lot of fighting for that. We want to be, some of those murders haven't been yet investigated fully, even though it's been 40 years since then. We have still movement asking who murdered the son of Juan Mari Bra, who murdered Carlito Muñoz Varela.
And it's interesting too, because during that same time, and we talked about this before in the podcast, during that same time that Puerto Rico is going through this real big, a lot of murders are happening, and a lot of people are trying to protest. Okay. The same thing was happening here, where the Puerto Ricans here were trying to protest. It was a little different because the Puerto Ricans here were fighting against the oppression of them trying to live with each other here, mm-hmm. and you're getting people not giving you health care. So that's how the Young Lords got started. So I wanted to make a point of that too, that you had Puerto Ricans fighting everywhere for what they to just be accepted, mm-hmm. and to be heard for what was going on.
And the influence is pretty big. There's a big deal of influence from the diaspora to the Puerto Ricans in Puerto Rico that is also not talked that much. Between the resistance in Puerto Rico, we have two main groups. Some of them that we call the nacionalista, mm-hmm. and some of them that we call the far left, and they're not always being able to work together.
Okay.
And in Puerto Rico, the system of national unity, at the first, it really helped the independence movement. But right now, every party, even the ones who claims the statehood, are really nationalistic. In just like the Republican Party here is believe in nationalism, so. The thing that to balance our identity, but at the same time with progressive values, it doesn't have a import in the island. It's not have been that clear. Albizu has not been a great influence in that.
Yeah.
But we can point out some conservative values that the followers of Albizu try to impose in the island. But here in the diaspora is all the opposite. Mm-hmm. That the cultural identity was really important for Puerto Rico here, mm-hmm. to organize the resistance. So we come from two different traditions. Then now in the 21st century, I think we're really able to help each other. That discussion has already passed, yeah. but that discussion, it really happened, and we must not forget about it. We have to remember it and understand it, why that cultural identity can be a bad thing for us, but at the same time we must not allow to be forgotten. We have to make it our own.
So you're saying that there was a big clash before, probably like that, the generation
in the
60s before us.
And the 80s, yeah, about nationalism versus socialism.
So nationalism being Puerto Rican nationalism, as far as what, like in what sense?
The thing is that in Puerto Rico there are two traditions in the independence movement. Basically, the nationalists who are the oldest, probably because mm-hmm. they came from more of anarchists, and then you have, they did involve, so Albizu, who is like the big figure for nationalism in Puerto Rico, and also I think in Chicago also I have seen a lot of Albizuism.
Yeah.
But in reality, parallel to that, it was also growing a more Betanciano, Ostosiano, maybe, way of looking at Puerto Rican independence, which wasn't based on nationalism as, say, Mussolini or, uh-huh, you know, uh-huh. fascism way of looking at nationalism, right? But a way of seeing us as these people who are all over, like, because Puerto Ricans are not an island, right? It's not a country. Mm-hmm. It's a nation of a lot of people all around the world, and they call themselves Puerto Ricans. Yeah. So at that point, you have to be critical and say, what are we fighting for exactly? What is the Puerto Rican the Puerto Rico that we want? And I think that idea of internationalism that came from the Cuban Revolution, a lot of that influence is very, right now it's very it's very rooted in the independence movement in Puerto Rico right now. So the nationalist sentiment that is once really powerful in the time, like in the 50s, is not as much right now. People are trying to look beyond nationalism and trying to see it as more
without quitting the idea of independence,
of anti-colonialism, because you don't have to be a nationalist to be anti-colonialist, exactly, in that sense. But the history of Puerto Rico, one thing you have to keep in mind is repression. So it's true that Puerto Rican independence movement has through the years slowed down. Like, it's maybe at the worst time for a Puerto Rican independence movement, but in reality, U.S. has been inside the movements. They have created a lot of repression for all the people, for the people who we can talk about COINTELPRO, which was the mm-hmm. FBI who got here in Chicago in the Young Lords, but also in Puerto Rico, they got inserted into the mm-hmm. movements and kind of did not help to bring it together, but also just the economic waves of just being in the 90s, there was a more stability, so even the activity, the political activity, slowed down. Mm-hmm. So it's a mix of what's happening in the economy and what's happening politically, culturally. So
maybe a good parallel would be like the Black Panthers or the Young Lords. Just as Puerto Rico resistance, we were defeated. That's mm-hmm. that's the pure conclusion. We were defeated in the 80s, and we're still trying to regroup and be reborn. Just like the Black Lives Matter, it's like a kind of reborn of the Black Panthers. Really different, but at the same, they are the kids of the same guys, or the grandkids of the same guy. Yeah. We have the really same heat in Puerto Rico right now. We have a group that is really increasing. It's called Acabaron las Promesas. That has a lot of these new trends. We also have a feminist new group in Puerto Rico, La Colectiva, who also have a lot of these new trends.
What is what has been happening since PROMESA started and even before PROMESA started, because to get a background on PROMESA, PROMESA was a law that was passed by U.S. Congress, and it basically took control of all economic endeavors in Puerto Rico. So okay. Anything that happens, any economical move, budgets, what gets cut, what gets more money, whatever, it gets decided not by the Puerto Rican legislature, not by the Puerto Rican governor, but by this new supra-governmental body, which is called Fiscal Control Board, but in Puerto Rico we just call it La Junta, like a junta in the 80s with the Latin American juntas, kind of Pinochet-y. So and what's been before that, before even La Junta, we saw a lot of the political movement getting together since we got Vieques, we got La Marina out of Vieques, and that same people are still active in Puerto Rico, and a lot of that's the basis for the Puerto Rican, for the young people moving now. Those people teach us how to be activists in Puerto Rico, and we teach the younger generation. All of this happens a lot in the University of Puerto Rico, that base, I don't know, political, a lot of teaching happened, a lot of let's get together, let's study, let's learn about feminism, gender equality, and we got, like we said, we got a lot of groups, but why we should organize is discussed a lot, and what's the political power of organized movements, and that's, I think that's what has moved this new movement, and also just the rage against the junta, because the junta is just...
It's very interesting to see, because as I was looking from the outside looking in, right? So I'm seeing Puerto Rico going through this economic crisis. Eventually, they're trying to get filed for bankruptcy, and they can't because it's stated, you know, the Congress will stated that they can't do that because they're not a state, right? So then you have these people saying, oh, well, let's become a state, let's do this. Then they put the PROMESA bill out, right?
PROMESA bill was finally signed by the president about a year ago.
Okay, President Obama signed it out a year ago.
Exactly.
They create the PROMESA bill, and then the Junta also came in because of the PROMESA
bill. Yeah, La Junta is part of the Junta is what PROMESA bill created, basically. Okay. The PROMESA bill says Puerto Rican can govern themselves. We're going to invent a new government that's going to be at the top of the governor. It's going to be 11 people, 11 or 7 people, right?
I think it's 7 people.
And they just deal with the finances?
Everything. Basically, they just cut off whatever limited autonomy we had in the 50. We just lost it.
So
every budget preservation, every law, right now, the Puerto Rican Congress can pass it. They do all the circus stuff and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But then at the end, the board has to say, no, that this is not that.
So for a lot of people, it was kind of like a low blow, right? Because they were like, wow, this whole time I thought that we had our own government, that we could do our own rules and regulations. Some people, right? I'm saying mostly the outside looking in, right? Sure. A lot of us look at it and we're like, oh, yeah, Puerto Rico, we're still American citizens, but we have our own governor. They could do their own thing. And then now you start seeing this when like they say, when shit gets real, it's like, whoa. We really can't do our own laws because these people could say, no, you're not going to do it.
That's why I was so confused, because I actually, like I said, I studied this in college, right? So I was taught that as a colony, right, the U.S. pretty much controls everything that's happening. So even though you guys had a government or whatever, I was like, what's the point? Because
the laws are...
Right? You say one thing and we can just say, nope, sorry. Or you know what I mean?
No, we had a lot of autonomy, especially with our own taxes, our own judicial system, our own... But really limited.
Exactly.
It's more like a managerial autonomy than really.
Think about the Indians region here. The same law that applied to Indians in 1917 was the same law they applied to us 2 years later. Mm-hmm. So basically, you have to think about the Indian territories. That's the way, the best way to.
I mean, you have to take into consideration who is in this junta, right? Because the junta is not made of people, common people in Puerto Rico. They're not students or even people who were chosen by the people. Yeah, it's not representative.
Or even Puerto Ricans, right?
Even I think it's like it wasn't.
The president is Puerto Rican, and we have at least two Puerto Rican more. And one of them is Puerto Rican descent.
There are
the rest are Americans.
Most of them are American, but they are bankers. They are people who have a lot of property and interest in the banking and like big corporations in Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. And there's one person that was chosen to the junta who was the. She was in charge of the economy in Ukraine, and I don't know if you know anything about Ukraine, but it's pretty crazy right now in Ukraine, and it's a disaster. So that person was put on the board, and she is paid, like, I don't know how,
I saw that.
Let me clarify that. She's like not that. Exactly in the board. She works for the board.
She works.
She is going to be the board directive, okay. How you call that? The CEO, basically.
Okay.
The board, it will be the like a board of a company, and the CEO will be like the president.
Yeah.
So she's not part of the board. Obama didn't appoint her, but the people that Obama appointed choose her.
Oh, wow.
And they're paying her because she's an employee of them. They're paying her more than the United Obama.
The president. The Chicago Boricua Resistance, which, by the way, before I forget,
and where is this money coming from?
Which, by the way,
from Puerto Rico, not even from the U.S. They're going to charge us for every expense of the junta.
Millions and millions.
They're asking $2 million per month.
So before I forget, you know, check out the Chicago Boricua Resistance on Facebook. I want to mention that because I know we'll keep talking. I'll forget about that. But the reason I want to mention that is because I saw you guys have a flyer, a post on Facebook, which explains how much each person makes, right?
Oh, yeah.
And when I was looking at that, I was like, man, this is crazy. Oh. You know, it's like, this is, you know, it's like, who's, like you said, like, who's paying for this, you know, like, and then like you mentioned, you know, the people of Puerto Rico who are already in debt and they are going through all that.
This
so
makes no sense.
What are some of the key issues that the Promesa bill, so from the outside looking in again, I remember seeing something about, you know, bringing down the minimum wage. Is that part of what the Promesa bill is trying to
bring up? It's an option. It's legal now. It hasn't happened yet. But now it's legal to lower the minimum wage to $4.
The thing is that the governor, he is also with the board, kind of. He's not against the board. He's working to create a new budget for Puerto Rico. But that budget is not counting on anything but what the bonistas, that's what we call it in Puerto Rico, the bankers who have the hedge funds and all that, they're basically, they want their money. We have a lot of them, 70s. Some people say 73, some people say 123.
Doesn't it go down to about like $35,000 to $40,000 per Puerto Rican? Is that how they kind of break it down?
Something like that. Yeah. And they want their money, yes or yes. So, and what they want to do is put the debt before people's need. So anything that is schooling or health or roads or anything that you can think of, it's gonna be pushed back, and what is gonna be paid for first is gonna be the debt. So that's what brings me to the student movement and to the strike, because the students, they strike to stop one of the big cuts to the University of Puerto Rico because La Junta wanted it.
Yeah.
They wanted it to cut the budget of the university to make room for more payments for the debt. So it's not even money that is going to go back to the Puerto Rican people or even go back to the roads. It's going to be just... It's like a sucking monster, kind of, you know.
It's very interesting.
A leech,
it's like things that make you go, right? So, mm-hmm. like, you know, yeah. the first ones that they're getting rid of is money for the student, which what you guys just mentioned was that university is kind of like the foundation of this independence movement as well. And, you know, why not cut the legs off of that so yeah. that they can't even think of that? I know we have a lot that we could talk about. You know, we're kind of short on time. We wanted to keep it under an hour. But if people wanted to know more about the Chicago Boricua Resistance, I mentioned the Facebook. Where else can they go to?
Definitely right now we have the Facebook page. You can see we try to put the latest news because a lot of the news are in Puerto Rico or networks in Puerto Rico, which they really don't get to the U.S. So you can find in English and Spanish. Mm-hmm. And you can also find us twice a month. Oh my God, Kaku. K4 Radio, Q4 Radio .org or org. We have a live show there, and we try to bring on people from the island and here from the Puerto Rican community to talk about what is happening. I mean, all the Puerto Rican activism, but especially everything that is happening against the junta, because we are trying to be part of Las Jornadas Acabaron Las Promesas, okay. which are the people who are wearing the black and white t-shirts. Mm-hmm. And we are trying to get the voice out that we need this Puerto Rican movement to be more militant. We need more power, more political power, so we can call ourselves a movement and mm-hmm. make some real great changes that need to happen, mm-hmm. not only in the island, but here in our city that we can talk about in another day.
Yeah, definitely. I think we definitely need to get together again to talk more about what brought Puerto Rico to where it's at now. I know we went through a real quick. Yeah, I think it's like a whole series that we could talk about what's happening right now. The main thing, mi gente, is if you want to find out more about it, like she mentioned, go onto the Facebook page, listen to their show, contribute if you can, help out. Also, you know, if you can go out to our page, we'll have all their information on there. Go to our website, www.laveldadltd.com. We'll also have it on our Facebook page and social media, which is you can find us through @laveldadltd. Once again, I wanted to thank you guys for coming by. I know we have a lot more that we want to discuss, so let's probably talk and see if we could do a round two of this later on. But, mi gente, thank you guys for coming. Anything you guys want to say?
Thank you. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. And really, anytime you want to bring us back and talk about this, this is Puerto Rico is close to our hearts, and we are working towards independence wherever we are. Yeah.
Awesome. You heard it here on La Verdad Podcast, mi gente. God bless. Peace.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again, after last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please!
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the greige.
I miss color.
Or when you were sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.